appendectomy. And you can let some religious fundamentalist freak declare that kidney transplant is demonic, or you can have what actually happened a week ago, I think, out in California, where a 14-year-old boy who was in the care, custody, and control of a Jehovah's Witness goon was brainwashed by his auntie into declaring that he wished to die rather than receive a blood transfusion and violate the purity of the blood.
My God, did that really happen?
Yep, dead as a stone.
That's a stupid question.
Dead as a stone. He was 14 years old. He was responding to chemo, but his blood had become too weak, and they wanted to give him a transfusion, and his Jehovah's Witness goon aunt had him brainwashed to the point that he looked at a judge and said, "I'll die instead because I don't want to dishonor the blood."
Right, and they'd probably given him the whole line about how he would die in peace.
His auntie had given him the line about how he would burn in hell.
Oh, but I mean, no pain while you're dying. In other words, they'll medicate you. You won't hurt when you die, but then you'll go to heaven, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and then he lapsed into a coma and died, and the judge said that, he seemed smart enough to me. He looked like he'd made a rational decision. Somebody take that judge out and just, whip him about the head and shoulders for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm mean again. Agent Fred will have a fit over that. But, how can you sit in judgment of humanity and tell a 14-year-old that it's okay? It comes from one stupid verse in the Old Testament about honoring the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And they build an entire religious structure around it. That just happened to be on the wires last week. Four or five kids die every year, Peter, because their parents happen to be Jehovah's Witnesses and would rather see little Susie die than get a blood transfusion.
This whole thing, I'm still stuck on abortion. The whole thing about abortion, don't you see how similar it is to this rejection of evolution? Because the egg and the sperm meet, and then this one cell thing evolves literally. And I think there's a stage where you have gills, if I'm not mistaken.
There is.
You literally evolve.
There's a stage where you have a tail too.
But they can't accept that it's not. It's a proto human. It's a chimpanzee, if you will. It's a fish, if you will. It's something with a tail, if you will. They cannot acknowledge that is the pathway. And it's in the womb, just like it's in nature with the chimpanzees. In order to validate themselves, you must become a person at the moment, because the egg and the sperm unite, because that's the way God does things.
It's a wholesale rejection of science, Peter. Because I guess in Fundy world, the egg and the sperm meet, they have dinner, they take in a movie. there's no real fertilization until they've become, married or something, or had a purity ball, or. But it's a rejection of science, because you're right. The fertilization of a human ovum is evolution in microcosm.
It certainly is. It is the equivalent of the amoeba in the sea, or whatever the first.
And you'll
was.
Notice
and
that then, when they drive around cities with their gory trucks with their pictures of aborted babies, they're always, like full-term babies. They've never got pictures of the baby with the gills or the baby with the front that looks like a tadpole.
Yeah, good point, Bob.
Because, they'd sort of be, taking a bite out of their own dogma if they did that, and that would be a little embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've killed another hour, Peter.
Yeah. I can see where they would argue that you shouldn't have an abortion an hour before you're supposed to deliver. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some
logic. Yeah, at that point, it's moot.
Well, yeah, it becomes moot, yeah.
And the Supreme Court kind of recognized that when they said that, there's a limit to what you can and cannot abort. But even so, they made up this, and it is. I mean, I've checked with, some medical professionals I know, and, my dear Agnes. So-called partial birth abortion is a non-existent medical procedure.
Agnes talked to me about that one time, about how they disguise terms and everything. But until you're actually out of the womb, you don't have a birth certificate signed by the doctor, so you're not a human being, even if it is an hour before birth. But I, in my mind, an hour before birth is a little bit too much. But,
yeah, well, mine too. And, you know, when I grow a uterus, I will have a real dog in the fight and be entitled to that opinion, frankly.
Bless your heart. I feel the same way. And, you know, that's, and I even extend that to the whole, you know, being a gay man thing, and, you know, I have a straight bone in my body, so a lot of the abortion stuff, it's none of my business, because I'll never be involved in it. Number one, I don't have relations with women, and number two, I don't have a vagina, so really, it's none of my damn business. But you, in this world, you can't just not, you know, you have to think about things, even if they don't affect you, and which is what's wrong with the world, so many people don't.
Well, that there is that, and the other end of that spectrum, Peter, is that too many people are unwilling to mind their own damn business.
Well, there's that.
Because their lives are so sad and so pathetic and so empty that, you know, unless they've got somebody in a position of authority telling them that somebody's going to hell, their life is empty. They've got to worry about who's going to hell because they want to make sure that they're with the right, you know, that they're in the right country club. It's the country club approach to the afterlife.
Bob, how well said that was. You get a star for the day, dude.
Oh, bless your little heart.
But that was eloquent. It is. It's the country club approach. And who's been, who do you know? And where do you play golf?
Well, yeah, and well, Muffy, you know that, you know, we're not going to have to spend eternity with those people.
Right.
So, yeah, it is. It's, yeah, okay. I'm glad you like that. Makes me proud.
I like that. I like it. You've done good.
Well, no, we really have. We've knocked off more than another hour, and you've done a lovely job at it, and I really thank you for your time. I wish you a very, very happy weekend.
Thank you. Well, I rallied toward the end. I had this, like, lull after that show that I did, and then I was like, you know, and then, but, you know, I'm rallying again. I'm thinking, let's go for another. No, it's right. We need to go bad.
Oh, so bad.
Thank you.
You know, in closing, here's Lowell George reminding you to...
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan is being given 10 days to lift current martial law or face suspension from a 53-nation bloc. Foreign ministers put out the warning in light of continuing emergency rule in Pakistan. Former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto placed again under house arrest for the second time in 4 days. She's being kept from leading tomorrow's 185-mile procession in protest of current martial law. President Musharraf promises that general elections will be held by January 9th, but that the state of emergency imposed 1 week ago will stay in place till then. Hamas police killed 7 people in Gaza City during a huge political rally to commemorate the death of Yasser Arafat. Another 130 people were wounded. The deaths intensify an already bitter divide among Palestinians. Some blame top Hamas leaders for the killings. The U.S. military is reversing the troop surge in Iraq. Commanders are waiting to see if the recent drop in violence will hold. 20 combat brigades have shrunk to 19 in the volatile Diyala province. American forces in Iraq could be cut from the current 167,000 to 140,000 by July of next year. In his first major speech on foreign policy since becoming prime minister, Gordon Brown is calling Britain's relationship with the U.S. its most important. Brown is also recommending that the European Union strengthen its ties with Washington, also warning Iran over its nuclear ambitions. China's foreign minister, meantime, meets with Iranian officials about their refusal to quit enriching uranium. Tehran has also agreed to meet with the European Union's top nuclear negotiator in the next few weeks. The White House is under federal court order to preserve copies of its email messages in response to a pair of lawsuits brought by two private citizens groups. The U.S. Justice Department asked that the courts accept a White House promise to save all future backup tapes, but U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy decided that was not enough. And in San Francisco, the Coast Guard has opened a criminal investigation into last week's bridge collision of a container ship. The subsequent oil spill is the region's worst in 20 years. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News next.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
A Grand Canyon wildlife biologist has died of the bubonic plague. The 37-year-old National Park Service employee probably contracted the disease when he conducted an autopsy on a dead animal. In New Orleans, the city's iconic streetcars began rolling through the Garden District for the first time since Hurricane Katrina. The storm 2 years ago shut down the line after 170 years of continuous operation. It is the third day of a stagehand strike in New York City. 27 of Broadway's most popular theaters remain dark. Negotiations broke down after months of talks, the dispute primarily revolving around work rules. The U.S. trade deficit fell to $56.5 billion in September, its lowest level in more than 2 years. The plunging value of the U.S. dollar has increased American exports. Asian markets fell steeply today on continued concerns about U.S. Credit crisis. Japan's Nikkei average hit its biggest low of the year. And the price of oil fell today. Saudi Arabia's oil minister announcing OPEC would consider increasing output when the cartel meets later this year. Light sweet crude trading currently at $94.62 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow down 55 points, NASDAQ down 43, S&P 500 off 14. More on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most
11,
of the
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Well, welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome aboard Foxed Up for a Monday. It's the witching hour of the opening night of the week. Welcome aboard. And I'm telling you, if you're in the chat room, that new emoticon of Bob is just, it's kind of scary. And having, you have to go in. If you've never been to the chat room, you got to go. Head on radionetwork.com, follow the chat links, and you'll be in there in no time. keep chatting, folks. Get that thing out of my screen. It just, I can't help myself but giggle looking at that. Anyway, what are we doing? Oh, yeah, we've got a serious subject tonight, and it's one of these subjects that it's time to grow up a little, you know? This is one of those subjects that, I don't know, immaturity by adults seems to make us avoid something that could really make a difference to this planet and our lives, and that subject is industrial hemp. Now, I'm not talking about pot, I'm talking about hemp, and there's a big difference. And the reason why I decided to get into this tonight is I think I found this via Raw Story today. There's an article at the Washington Post about farmers taking the issue of being able to raise industrial hemp to the federal court. And I think that this is a really important issue. Someone says, grow up. Why? In the chat room. I say, oh, well, you know, stay young at heart. But when it comes to this subject, I think the naysayers need to just grow up a bit. In fact, last week on the ABC, there's a really good panel and discussion program called Difference of Opinion. And they were talking about the environment and things that can be done. And when they went to the audience, a young man brought up the usefulness of hemp. And the gentleman on the panel who was representing the Chamber of Commerce and Industry just blew him off completely and said, oh, you know, if it was viable, business would have taken it on a long time ago. Well, that's not exactly true. And writing it off in such a way just shows either ignorance or bias. But just to tell you, just to get into this piece in the Washington Post, before I get into why we should be doing this, says here, Wayne Hagee grows grains, chickpeas, and some lentils on his 2,000 acres in northern North Dakota. Business is up and down, and the farming trade tends to be. And he was always on the lookout for a new crop. He tried sunflowers and safflowers and black beans. Now he has set his sights on hemp. Hemp is a straight-laced cousin of marijuana. It's an ingredient in products from fabric to food to carpet backing and car door panels. Farmers in 30 countries grow it, but it's illegal to cultivate the plant in the United States without federal approval, to the frustration of Hagee and many boosters of North Dakota agriculture. On Wednesday, Hagee and David C. Monson, a fellow aspiring hemp farmer, will ask a federal judge in Bismarck to force the Drug Enforcement Administration to yield to a state law that would license them to become hemp growers. I'm looking forward to the court battle, said Hagee, a 49-year-old father of three. I don't know why the DEA is so afraid of this issue. The law is the law, and it treats all varieties of cannabis sativa the same. Bush administration lawyers argue in asking U.S. District Judge Daniel H. Hovland to throw out the case. The DEA says a review of the farmers' applications is underway. To clear up the popular confusion about the properties of what is something called industrial hemp, the crop's prospective purveyors explain that hemp and smokable marijuana share a genus and a species, but are about as similar as rope and dope. The active ingredient in marijuana is THC. While hemp typically contains 0.3% THC, the leaves and flowers coveted by pot smokers have 5% or more, sometimes up to 30%. That's pushing it a bit. You could also smoke a joint the size of a telephone pole, Hagee said of hemp, and it's not going to provide you with a high. And he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. And, you know, you even look back in U.S. history, hemp was like a cash crop. In fact, farmers had to grow hemp by law. And this all changed when Prohibition came in. And, you know, the things that hemp can be used for are just, it's endless. I mean, not to sound, you know, like a religious fanatic, but it is kind of like Mother Earth's genius plant. It can produce fuels. It can produce fabrics. It can produce paper. You know, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights are actually on hemp paper. Someone goes, telephone pole, that's some doobie. I think I knew someone that used to know how to roll those. But that's a completely different subject. but seriously, this is a completely different subject of discussion than, say, the legalizing of marijuana, which I am also a supporter of, but that's a completely different argument. Okay? I want to separate the two because they are different. Now, not only does hemp have the ability to create all these products, it also is really good for the land itself. When you grow industrial hemp, its root systems aerate the soil. So if you're doing proper crop rotation, it almost perfectly conditions the soil for the next year's crop. There's a reason that they call it weed. It grows anywhere. And one of the other beauties of it, if you're growing it in an industrial fashion, because of its thick kind of bushy leaf, you know, structure, it shades the ground around it, and basically you have zero weed problems, which means you don't need to use chemical fertilizers and all these other things. The benefits just kind of are endless. You can make soap from it. You can make body lotions from it. Like I said before, you can make fuel from it. You can make food from it. I've got a bunch of links on today's show post, and I just want to find, I've got a, way too many things open here. But anyway, you'll see on today's blog post an image, which will link you to PureDelightHemp.com, which is an Australian outfit that makes hemp-based products, all kinds of different things. And they have this great little graphic that shows all the things that you can do with it. Now, just the whole stalk, it's kind of divided into two sections. There's the whole stalk, and then there's the hemp seed. Now, the whole stalk, from the bast fiber, you can make textiles, which gives you apparel, fabrics, bags, shoes, socks. In fact, the United States government has to import all of its hemp rope for the military because you're not allowed to grow it in the States. You can also make technical textiles, cordis, netting, canvas, carpeting. I believe a lot of Van Gogh's paintings were on hemp canvas. And then there are other things, industrial products. You can make geotextiles, biocomposites, which you get into that stuff, and you're getting into like building materials that you can actually make tiles and wall panels to build homes. And it's a quick-growing, quick-regenerating crop, so you wouldn't be having to cut down all these trees to build homes. You can make compression molding, all kinds of stuff. Now, from the woody core, you can make insulation. There's a product called Hempcrete, which is basically a concrete replacement. And concrete is actually one of the most environmentally offensive things in our modern world. When you calculate in how much fossil fuel it takes to mine the raw material, truck it off to where it gets processed, then truck it off to the shops, then actually all the work that has to be done with the cement mixers and the trucks that bring those out to, you know, building sites. And, you know, this is something I should actually get my brother on and ask him about, because I mean his life is concrete. For him, concrete is an art form, and I do not belittle what he does at all, but I kind of wish that his industry would look into doing things like this. You can also make animal bedding, mulch, boiler fuel. Then there's the paper for printing, cigarette filters, newsprint, packaging, cardboard, netting, canvas, and carpeting. And that's just the plant body itself. Then you get into the actual seed. And it just goes on from there. And I'll pick this up. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll go through some of this. And if you've got some opinion on this, please feel free to ring in. I'd love to hear if you've been involved in any of this. So stick around. You're with Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're talking about industrial hemp. The time is now, as far as I'm concerned. Stick around. You're on the Head On Radio Network.
Seemed like total silence was the only friend I had. Bowl of oatmeal tried to stare me down and won. And it was 12 o'clock before I realized I was having no fun. But fortunately, I have the key to escape reality. And you may see me tonight with an illegal smile. It don't cost very much, but it lasts a long while. Won't you please tell the man I didn't kill anyone? No, I'm just trying to have me some fun.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe, are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
They ask me how I view. My true love was true. Oh, I of course reply, something here inside cannot be denied. Oh no. They said someday you'll find all who love are blind.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. Was that what you intended to play, Bob? Anyway, welcome back to the show, everybody. We got Nanette on the line, but just hold on a second, Nanette. I'm just going to run through a couple things here. Like I said, the hemp seed can do so much. The hemp nut can give food, can make bread, granola, ice cream, milk, cereal, protein powders for all those, you know, jockey people. Seed cake after pressing can make animal feed, protein-rich flour. Hemp oil can be used for salad oil, supplements, margarine, saute oil, and I bet it's better margarine than that plastic crap that you have in the grocery store at the moment. Body care, soap, shampoo, hand cream, cosmetics, which will be a lot better than the petrochemical stuff. Wonder why they're not using it, ha ha ha. And technical products, oil paint, solvents, varnish, lubricant, printing ink, diesel fuel, and coatings. I mean, it's just kind of endless. It's endless. But let's go to the phones. Nanette, how are you? Welcome to the program.
And I have some questions I wanted to ask you.
Well, fire away, darling.
Okay, you know what a mess we have here with NPR.
Oh, boy, do I.
Okay, these sites won't grow anything. Grass won't even grow there, you know? They're good for nothing. Would hemp grow on those sites?
It's a good question. As far as I know, with the MTR technique and the way that they backfill the valleys and all the burn off, very little can grow. However, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the few things that could grow would be hemp, just because of its properties of being extremely resilient. It's something that I'll do some probing and see if I can find some answers on that, because it might be. You know, if these gentlemen are able to get this case through, it might be something to be considered in your area of the world, because as far as I know, Bob's told me that there's pretty much just kind of some sort of weedy grass is about the only thing that seems to grow on it.
Well, it's just awful. I mean, you know, trees don't grow on it, and when we have a dry spell, everything just turns brown. It just dries up. The erosion's terrible, you know, and I thought, well, you were talking about all the things that this will do. That would be a wonderful cash crop.
Well, you know? And even if it, you know, I'm wondering as well, just because of the fact that it does so well to recondition the soil.
Yeah.
If you could get it to take after a few seasons, could it possibly get the soil back to a condition where it could grow other things?
Uh-huh.
I don't have a definitive answer on that, but it's something that I'll look into. I'll send off some emails to a few people and see if I can get an answer on that. It's something that I hadn't thought of.
I had thought of it, but, you know, I just wasn't really sure about it, and you were doing your show on it, and I thought, well, I'll just ask you, you know?
Hey, that's, you know? This, That's what this is for. And
yeah.
You know, the big thing that you get involved with here is the fact that the criminalization of all forms of cannabis kind of tracks back to Hearst and the DuPont family and all these people that want to use, you know, here in Australia, they still grow cotton in a place that is struggling for water. It would be much more intelligent to grow hemp for paper and hemp for fabric than growing all this cotton, which creates, you know, toxic runoff when you bleach it. To bleach hemp paper or hemp cloth, it only takes, like, ultra-purified water to actually bleach it, and there's no chemical runoff. So, it's really silly that, you know, the DEA basically set out a thing that's, you know, basically has the stance that it's too hard for the police to tell the difference, so just make it all illegal.
Well,
that's the logic.
Look what they're doing here. Test, this is illegal, you know? They're ripping us apart. To me, that's illegal criminal activity.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
But to grow something that would benefit mankind on land that they've totally destroyed, it's useless, nothing will grow on it, and if they could grow something that would benefit everybody with all this, the materials and products that can come from it, it would be criminal not to do it.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's why I say it's time to grow up about this issue, because you bring this up with some people and they just go, hey, you just want to legalize it so you can smoke it. And it's just like, no, I do want to legalize it so I can smoke the other stuff, because I think that that is a whole lot less damaging to my body than alcohol. And after the experience that I had with my partner on chemotherapy, I can tell you that there are medical benefits for people in treatment from smoking marijuana. Now, marijuana is...
My mother died of cancer. She suffered terribly. If I could have gotten my hands on it, you better believe I'd have got it for her. It would have helped.
Well, you know, it not only helps with symptoms and things like that, but, you know, for people on chemo, trying to eat properly is difficult. So it helps to stimulate the appetite. For my missus, where she was having to inject herself every week with interferon, if she had some before she did the injection, the side effects from the injection were a fraction of what they were without, and her doctor supported the practice. They saw nothing wrong with it.
Well, I just think that I don't know. It just seems to me like some people's minds are so closed to everything. And I don't know what makes them that way. They don't want to think about anything new.
Well, and the thing is that it's not even new, though, Nanette. We're talking about a plant that's been used for centuries. And it really comes down to yellow journalism that started in the 20s and 30s. And we have not been able to break the taboos and the lies about what is one of the most beneficial plants ever known to mankind.
I've just been sitting here thinking all evening after I found out what your show was going to be about, and I was thinking about all this wasted, ruined land that we have. You know, if it would grow here, what a benefit it would be.
I will see what I can find out about that, Nanette. Leave that with me for a few days, and let me see what I can find out. Because I think that you might be onto something there. Because if there's anything that could rejuvenate that soil, this would be it. When Bob told me about what they do with the clear felled trees, that they don't sell them to a furniture outlet or something, that they just burn it, my heart broke.
Well, that's
just
don't burn it, John. They just cover it up with dirt. They just bulldoze dirt over it. Beautiful logs.
it's insane. 300-year-old trees. What are they, nuts?
I saw one tree up there where they had felled it, and if you would have cut it into a length, it would have fit your long ways. In our S250, it was too big around to go into the bed of our truck.
Could you imagine the dining table that you could make from that?
I can't imagine. I mean, we've made all the woodwork in our house, and we went to an old sawmill and bought rough lumber, and we planed it and routed it and made every piece of wood in this house.
Oh, nice.
And I looked at that wood, and I wanted to cry.
As if you didn't have enough to be upset about just what they're doing to that state of yours, you know. I've said it before, you know, if I was living over there, I can guarantee you, I said this to Gail last night, that you would be seeing footage of me on television having to be physically removed from those sites. Because I don't see how I could avoid not actually putting my body on the line for that, because I just think it's absolutely criminally insane what goes on there to dig one of the most awful substances out of the ground, and it's just unwanted destruction. I don't understand it.
It is, but there have already been so much destroyed, and that's the reason I was interested in the hemp for the areas that's already been destroyed, if it could be used for something productive, because the plants will never be productive again.
I tell you what, there's an outfit called the North American Industrial Hemp Council, and there's a link on today's show post, and I'm going to contact these folks, and maybe we can even get somebody on air sometime, and we can ask them about that particular question, because it's a great resource site. They have a really long kind of frequently asked question sheet, which is like a list of almost 200, It's a great resource, so I think this is the first place where I'm going to go and ask and see if we can get someone on the show to talk about this and see if it can be used to maybe reclaim some of this absolutely just destroyed land.
I think thousands of acres has been destroyed. So you think if you get something that is that productive and that versatile that you can make all these products and it's renewable.
It's unbelievably renewable.
It would make so much sense to use that land for that purpose.
I couldn't agree with you more. I thank you so much for bringing in Nanette. I'm gonna let you go because I got a few things that I want to get into here.
Okay,
a little bit of the history of the illegality,
That's
all right, and I really appreciate it, and I will look into it. I just want to cover some other things, and we also have Gene coming on a little later to make a big announcement of sorts, and I got to leave some time for him. So thanks so much for ringing, Nanette.
Okay.
All righty. Now, okay. Here we go. At the VenusProject.com, they get into the history of why cannabis in all its forms is illegal. And it's a really, really long piece, but kind of, you know, to get into it. Back in 1938, Popular Mechanics released a piece calling industrial hemp the next billion-dollar crop. And what they say here is it has a short growing season. It can be grown in any state. The long roots penetrate and break the soil to leave it in perfect condition for the next year's crop. The dense shock of leaves, 8 to 12 feet above the ground, chokes out weeds. Hemp, this new crop, can add immeasurably to American agriculture and industry. In the 1930s, innovations in farm machinery would have caused an industrial revolution when applied to hemp. The single resource could have created millions of new jobs, generating thousands of quality products. Hemp, if not made illegal, would have brought America out of the Great Depression. See? Now, only moneyed interests could get in the way of this kind of stuff. William Randolph Hearst and the Hearst Paper Manufacturing Division of Kimberly-Clark own vast acreage of timberlands. The Hearst Company supplied most paper products. Patty Hearst's grandfather, a destroyer of nature for his own personal profit, stood to lose billions because of hemp. In 1937, DuPont patented the process to make plastics from oil and coal. DuPont's annual report urged stockholders to invest in its new petrochemical division. Synthetics such as plastics, cellophane, celluloid, methanol, nylon, rayon, Dacron, etc., could now be made from oil. Natural hemp industrialization would have ruined over 80% of DuPont's business. Andrew Mellon became Hoover's Secretary of the Treasury and DuPont's primary investor. He appointed his future nephew-in-law, Harry S. Anslinger, to head the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. Secret meetings were held by these financial tycoons. Hemp was declared dangerous and a threat to their billion-dollar enterprises. For their dynasties to remain intact, hemp had to go. These men took an obscure Mexican slang word, marijuana, and pushed it into the consciousness of America. Now, this is where I'm talking about the yellow journalism involved in criminalizing a plant. This is what kills me. We're criminalizing a plant. Hemp or cannabis or marijuana was outlawed in 1937 because it threatened the nationless corporate interests of William Randolph Hearst and DuPont. They had to get rid of the competition. Hearst's yellow journalism newspaper chain wrote scathing stories about marijuana, a word he made up because he knew no one would believe them about hemp, which George Washington himself grew hemp. The Decoratator, a state-of-the-art hemp harvester, led Popular Mechanics to call hemp the new billion-dollar crop. Because of printing and bindery lead time requiring for publication, this February 1938 article was actually prepared in spring 1937, when cannabis hemp was still legal to grow and was an incredibly fast-growing industry. Newsprint could now be produced far more cheaply than any other method, and 1 acre of hemp could produce as much newsprint as 4 acres of forest trees. You getting the size of this? Are you getting the size of what we're talking about? 1 acre of hemp can produce as much paper as 4 acres of pulp tree. It's insane. Hearst owned vast timber acreage, and competition from the hemp industry might have driven his paper manufacturing out of business. He stood to lose millions of dollars. DuPont stood to lose on two fronts. DuPont owned the patenting for converting wood pulp to newsprint and supplied Hearst with the necessary chemicals. Secondly, in the 1930s, DuPont was gearing up to introduce nylon and other man-made fibers along with synthetic petrochemical oils, which he had hoped would replace hemp, see oil used in paints and other products. The Decoratator meant that hemp fibers could be manufactured as fine as any man-made fibers. DuPont would lose untold millions of invested dollars plus an estimated 80% of all future business unless hemp was outlawed. Okay? This is the insanity of where we are. I mean, just think, if in 1938 all these moves hadn't been made and we were continuing to utilize hemp for its fuel capabilities, its paper capabilities, and its textile capabilities, we probably wouldn't be at war with Iraq because we wouldn't be needing this oil. We wouldn't have hit peak oil the way we did in the mid-70s. I mean, this is a serious, serious subject, and it all comes down to greed, as Billy Shears just said in the chat room. Now, the piece here also gets into media manipulation. A media blitz of yellow journalism raged in the 1920s and 30s. Hearst newspapers ran stories emphasizing the horrors of marijuana. The menace of marijuana made headlines. Readers learned that it was responsible for everything from car accidents to loose morality. Films like Reefer Madness, which I have a copy of, it's hysterical. Marijuana, Assassin of Youth, I have that one as well. And Marijuana, the Devil's Weed, were propaganda designed by these industrialists to create an enemy. Their purpose was to gain public support so that anti-marijuana laws could be passed. So, I mean, this is not a new thing, creating, you know, bogus enemies. I mean, we're still doing this stuff today. They say, examine the following quotes from The Burning Question, a.k.a. Reefer Madness. It's a violent narcotic, acts of shocking violence, incurable insanity, soul-destroying effects. Under the influence of the drug, he killed his entire family with an axe. More vicious, more deadly even than the soul-destroying drugs, heroin and cocaine. It is the menace of marijuana. Is that... I mean, this is lunatic stuff. But because of Hearst's control over the press, he was able to push this down people's throats. And unfortunately, the non-critical mind just goes, all right, that's all good. Okay, it's bad. And it doesn't make any sense. Okay? There was just a study that came out, and I didn't actually mean to get into the actual smokable stuff, but I mean, it really does get into it. It is the other side of the same argument, or another part of the same argument. The National Council on Psychiatrics or something just released a report talking about how smoking marijuana can actually help people with depression, help people with psychotic problems, okay? And I can tell you right now, from working gigs, I remember I was in Canberra doing a Ben Lee show, and I was talking to some of the security guys, and down in Canberra, you do a lot of gigs at the university there. And on the university, the regular... local cops are not allowed to patrol. It's university cops only. And a certain band was playing one night, and they were known for their pot consumption. And all the security guys said, you know what, I'll have those guys any day of the week. Because he said that audience was mellow, they were friendly, there was not one bit of violence. And when the band all sparked up on stage, security looked at them all and just went, yeah, whatever, do what you want. Do whatever you want. It actually wasn't the Dead. It was a hip-hop band. But, but then you talk about, you know, hard-drinking bands, and that's where you end up with the fights. And so the drug that's legal for everyone is the one that actually has the violent tendencies. And much worse abuse problems, and you cannot find me one piece of data that shows that anyone has ever died from an overdose of marijuana. It has never happened. It's basically physically impossible. Bob says, hard drink advance, Skinner, play Freebird. That's about right. And I'll tell you, a couple of years ago, or many years ago, there was a coffee shop here in Sydney that was allowed, you know, the cops kind of just overlooked what was going on. And it was this little coffee house that you could go in and have a really nice cup of tea and an organic, you know, cookie or whatever, and people would have a joint. And it was directly across the street from a big nightclub. And you could sit in there and watch the cops having to come and drag drunks out, bashing each other all night long out of the nightclub. But none of it, you never had an incident at the Amsterdam Cafe. But some of the neighbors decided that they didn't like it, and so they made a noise out of it, and the place got busted, and that was it. It was over. But even some of the police were quoted as saying, you know, it did us a service. It took the dealing off of the street, which was the only problem. And they never had any situations there. So what was the big deal? But see, it's that same fear campaign nonsense that keeps us from being able to even utilize the non-narcotic version of the plant for all of its benefit uses. Like I said, I'm willing to have two completely separate arguments about this. But I think first we got to grow up and use it for its industrial capabilities. Because it really could be a key aspect to fixing this environment. But, you know, will we grow up? Will we grow up and remove the deadhead image from what should be an industrial crop that should be more supported than cotton for fabric? I have a number of really, really nice hemp shirts. One of them has got to be almost 6 years old, and it looks virtually the same today as it did when I bought it. It's in perfect condition, and it breathes more than anything cotton I own. And it actually, you know, it's more insulating in winter. They hold their colors, and you can do anything you want to them, and they hold up. It's so much more durable than cotton fabric or synthetic fabrics. But, you know, that's, you know, and Bob's saying, you know, don't forget the biodiesel angle, and that's exactly right. You know, I thought I kind of got there, but not specifically. It has such, you know, it can be used, the seed can be pressed to make fuel. To make a fuel that doesn't have to be pulled out of the ground, that is some ancient sunlight that we cannot restore the supply of. This we can, in one growing season, grow it all over again. I just, you know, I really wish people would wake up and grow up. This is, I know I've said it a bunch of times tonight, but it's time to grow up on this issue. And bloody hell, it's warm in the studio tonight. Just had sweat roll down in my eye. Pardon me. It's the middle of the afternoon here in summer in Australia, so it's getting kind of warm in the studio these days. But I think right now we should go to the phones, because our news ninja, Mr. Gene Shinai, is on the line, and he's got a bit of an announcement to make. How you going, Gene? Welcome to the program.
Hey, John, how's it going? Speaking of...
I'm doing really well, mate.
Other stuff like that. I saw a study just the other day, I think it was Canada, that said once you legalize marijuana, its usage usually goes down. So, you know, why not... legalize everything, it's great. Anyway, here's my little announcement. If you are in the Washington County area tomorrow night, that's Oregon, Washington County, Oregon, and you're concerned about peak oil, there is indeed a peak oil group meeting tomorrow night at the local Unitarian Church. That's the Unitarian Universalist Community Church of Washington County at 22785 Northwest Birch Street. Doors open at 6:30. Meeting starts at 7. Runs until 9. I put the link up in the chat room. Gives driving directions and also alternative vehicle directions as well. So hope to see you there. One more thing, Bob. I won't be working tomorrow night. I've got a meeting to go to. And I guess with that, I'll see you later. It's great to hear you doing. I really appreciate learning about him.
No worries, man. Thanks for that. And folks, well, I think Gene should go ahead and post this on the blog as well. So if you're in this area of Washington County, they're having a public meeting on peak oil. And I think that this is, you know, I mean, this is one of the crucial subjects of our time. It's something that we need to seriously be looking at, because we can't pull it out of the ground any faster than we are now, right? We can't do it any faster, and it's just going to continue to get more and more expensive to pull it out of the ground. You know, many nations hit peak oil back in the 70s. I know we're only talking about this issue now, in the last couple of years. But, you know, I believe Iran hit peak oil in 1977. The United States hit peak oil in 1974. And all the oil-producing nations of the world have already hit peak oil. Now, they try and fudge it a bit and say, oh, it's a couple years off, because they're talking about kind of the processing and whatnot aspect of it. But when it comes to how fast we can pull it out of the ground, there are no new sources. There are absolutely no new sources. We found them all. And as they dry up, we got to drill further, and we end up getting more water with the oil than oil. So, I mean, this fits right into the conversation that we're having tonight. Hemp is one of the things that could really help us with this issue. And, you know, like I said, it's time to grow up and be adults about this issue. Stop with the nonsense, lies, and scare tactics over the issue. Right? Like I said, the whole narcotic end of it, that's another discussion. But I do support the legalizing of that, purely on the simple fact that, you know, most of the prisoners in America are in America for small-time drug offenses. And the resources that are wasted in policing on going and getting people with a couple of grams of weed could be so better used on other things. Hey, we could use it on corporate criminals. Interesting concept. But no, it plays better in the news when you're going, hey, we found a plantation of pot. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, it's one of the things that I do dig about Australia. There's a bit more tolerance here on the issue. They're trying to change it, right? This right-wing government that we've got is trying to change that. But I don't think the people are buying it. You know, I think it's something like 60 or 70% of